talk to the team about the importance of the game. It's the first conference game. It's a division game and a road game. And anytime you can win a division game on the road, that's a bigger plus because then you've got the tiebreaker over that team. You've got the division record. You've got the whole nine yards. So our guys understand it's a big game. They've set goals. They want to get back to Charlotte, and we need to win this game if that's going to be one of the goals.
There you heard him, folks. That was Paul Johnson talking about the game this week versus Duke. One interesting note is that we are only bringing three true freshmen to the game. Those freshmen will be our kicker, Harrison Butker, linebacker Paul Davis, and walk-on long snapper Strobel. Is that how you say his name?
I think that's a good enough effort there.
The voice you just heard there was Andrew Brown. My name is Will Patton. You are listening to the 4th and Short podcast.
Hopefully by now you kind of know what you're listening to, you know?
Yeah, you know what you're getting into, right? When you push play on these.
Maybe you've been duped. There are a few of you, I'm sure, who've been duped into listening to this by somebody else as a joke. But guess what? It's a good dupe.
This is a real thing.
Yeah.
You might think this is a joke, and you're like, oh gosh, who are these two guys? Is this a viral video or something that's just a fake?
Well, it's definitely not a video.
This is real. You're listening to this. But anyway, we wanted to open up this week talking about Georgia Tech. Both of us, if you haven't listened to the podcast before, we both graduated from Georgia Tech, so we do have a slight bias. We don't spend all of our time talking about Georgia Tech. We're only slightly biased, I think. You know, are we looking through the rose-colored glasses all the time, Andrew?
I mean, I don't think I am. No,
I don't think I am either. Maybe some other people will tell us otherwise.
But they're probably. I mean, they have a bias of, you know, themselves. So
exactly. But anyway, let's talk about the game this weekend, Georgia Tech versus Duke. I'm not terribly concerned about Duke, especially with them with their backup quarterback. But I feel like we will learn a whole bunch more about our team,
right?
Both the offense and the defense. Duke's defense has been pretty good in their first two games, albeit against smaller schools.
Right.
But we should learn a lot more about our offense than we did against Elon. And same thing with our defense. I figure that even though Duke is going with their second-string quarterback, I feel like there's still going to be a much, much tougher test for our defense.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see because they're doing something different now. So we're going to see how well this veer runs in their system. And, you know, it's interesting because David Cutcliffe is the quarterback guru. You know, I mean, he was the guy behind Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, and I believe several other quarterbacks at Tennessee. He was at Tennessee as offensive coordinator for several years and left to go to Ole Miss. And then after he was fired at Ole Miss, which to me still goes down as just a terrible decision by Ole Miss, he came back and was offensive coordinator again at Tennessee. So he was there for a long time, and he was with several different quarterbacks and produced a lot of great straight-up quarterback numbers, very, you know, much a drop-back pass, that kind of traditional offense. So this is something that we haven't seen from David Cutcliffe, and you know, I don't know if it's just that he couldn't get the type of quarterback that he was used to having while he was at Duke, or just saw that the times were changing and this zone read, which is kind of what they're doing, a lot more zone read stuff.
Yeah.
Is that the future? I mean, we're seeing it now in the NFL, and maybe David Cutcliffe is just trying to, you know, stay ahead of the curve here.
I think that's one of the advantages of the offense that we run, is that you can use plays like that to kind of combat the, you know, talent deficiency that you may have against another school. Because basically the whole point of that, of doing a zone read option, is you take players out of the game.
Right.
So, for example, when we run the triple option, which it's not really a zone read, but it has the same basic principle. Basically, you are taking one player out of the game. And most of our triple option plays, there is a defensive end that we completely leave alone and ends up doing nothing on the play.
Right.
And because of that, it gives you a numbers advantage and allows you to take advantage of the numbers rather than the physical side of things. So right. if it's executed properly, and of course you still need talent, but you're able to bridge the gap between scheme and talent.
Here's the thing. Anytime that you have to account for the quarterback, that changes the game. If you know the quarterback could at any time take off and run, you have to account for that. You have to have somebody who sits back and spies or whatnot. And yep. if you didn't have to do that, then, you know, it's a different game. And if you are, you know, if you have the biggest, baddest guys on your line, you probably don't need to. You can just line up and run straight at somebody. But everybody can't do that.
Yeah.
The biggest, baddest you know guys what? Are not going to be at every single school. That's why they're the biggest, baddest guys.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny. A few years ago when we took on Paul Johnson and started implementing this offense, and everybody starts kind of jibing at us for having a high school offense and saying it's so easy to defend. All you have to play is assignment football. That's something that you hear a lot, is just play assignment football. Well, Paul Johnson was on his radio show yesterday, and one of the things that he spoke about was he hates that term, assignment football, because what do you do against every other offense? Do you just run around with, you know, with your hands flailing in the air? No, everybody plays assignment football against every offense.
Right.
So it's just a matter of execution and having the players that can execute it. And that's kind of brings me back to the where we opened up the show. We're talking about the number of freshmen that are coming to the game this weekend. There's only three of them coming. You can argue that our freshman class wasn't the best ever this year. It was definitely small. But I think it's really interesting the number of people that we redshirt every single year.
Right.
And the way Paul Johnson puts it is, would you rather have a 17 or 18-year-old true freshman, or would you like to have a 22 or 23-year-old fifth-year senior?
Well, think about it. I think that's a great point. Look at BYU. BYU yeah. has an additional two-year advantage on everybody, and I think most schools would take that. You're not going to turn that
exactly.
down.
Yeah, and then you look at our depth chart, and you see the number of people on our who are our starters for us who have redshirted.
Right.
It's almost the entire team. I think there's two guys on offense and four guys on defense. The rest of the starters are all have been redshirted at some point, and we have lots of redshirt seniors all over the place, especially on the offensive line where we have three of them. So you have those guys that wouldn't be here, you know, unless they were redshirted, and they're big contributors now in their last year. And that's something that I think is another way. We talked about running a type of, you know, zone read option or the spread option that we have to kind of make up for deficiencies in talent. This is another way, is you give a guy a whole nother year of experience in your offense, and a fifth-year guy is always going to be better than a first-year guy.
Right. That's true.
Every single day of the week.
You know, you don't want to waste some kids' eligibility. You know, why put them on the field when they're a freshman if they're not going to contribute?
Yeah.
I take the look at Josh Nesbitt. What did you teach him that first year? He played in 2007 as a backup
quarterback.
Throw
the ball as far as you can or just run straight with it.
Right.
That's all he did when he was on the field.
And what how did that benefit you? How did that – did he win any games for you as a true freshman?
Probably not.
Yeah, I can't think of one where he came onto the field and, you know, rallied the troops and won one for the Gipper. I mean, you know, you used him just to kind of put him on the field and run with it occasionally. That's not there to win a game. So would you have rather had him as a redshirt senior than that 2007 season as a true freshman? Absolutely.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic to have him for another season.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to win it. That means you put him on the field as a redshirt senior, you probably at least win one more game than you did.
Yeah, and that 2011 season was a little bit rough at times, so having him out there would have been awesome
right.
if we could have had him.
Right.
So, yeah, I completely agree with you.
And there are times that you can't redshirt somebody. You know, if they're so good, like – why would you redshirt Clowney? There's no reason to redshirt him as a freshman because he's going to go on the field and contribute immediately. Yeah. You know, and then you're just basically wasting a year where you don't ever play him. So there are exceptions, but if you know a kid isn't going to play that much, don't put them out there just to, you know, get scrub time. That's a waste.
Yeah. I agree. And you look at the three guys that we aren't redshirting. Harrison Butker is by far our best kicker.
Right.
Paul Johnson made comments this week saying that he's probably going to be playing in the NFL one day. So, and based on the way that he played in the first game, you want him out there for sure. No need to redshirt him. Paul Davis was the other one, and Paul Davis is just, it looks like he is just a very, very special individual.
Right.
And someone that we really need on the field right
just
now.
Just kind of a lightning rod kind of guy. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. And he's playing on all the special teams, and he's in our two deep already as a true freshman. So you want him out there in the field. Yeah, you can make the argument that he would be better as a fifth-year senior, just like everybody else, but he's the kind of guy that can fill some needed gaps right now.
Right.
And if it's out of necessity, you put him in there.
Right.
And I believe that he's in there out of necessity. So,
yeah,
good for him. And then the last guy is a walk-on long snapper. And normally I don't think you would redshirt a walk-on. I wouldn't think.
Well, you know, the thing is that you take him, and he might not even play, but you take him because if you have an injury to a long snapper, you don't want to be caught without one.
Exactly.
You don't want that. No, that's basically it. So you take them as an insurance. It's like a backup catcher on a playoff roster. You know, you might not play him, but you don't want to get your catcher injured and not have a catcher.
Exactly.
Now, here's a question I do have for you here.
Okay.
If it was reversed, would you rather right now have David Cutcliffe on Georgia Tech's sideline and then Paul Johnson at Duke? Or would you take it as it is?
I'd definitely take it as it
is. Okay, interesting, because I don't know how many people remember that when Paul Johnson came to Tech, he picked our school over Duke. I mean, that was the other – there was SMU, Duke, and Georgia Tech all called him, and he interviewed at all three jobs, and he was offered all three jobs, and, you know, he took the Tech job. So, you know, it's interesting to note, you know, well, what would have been different if that happened. So you're right. I agree. I like David Cutcliffe a lot. I think what David Cutcliffe has done at Duke is almost impossible to do. You know?
Gave him a bowl game last year, something they haven't done in
something
a long time.
They haven't done since 1994. He did, okay?
Yeah.
So he is a great coach. And, you know, I think that David Cutcliffe is just one of the good guys in college football, so you want to see him, you know, succeed, but not this week.
Yeah, let's move into a story that broke today.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk too much about it because we don't know all the information.
Right, we don't have everything, but it is something that we need to talk about. I don't think we want to wait until
weekend. Because this is something pretty big. Oklahoma State is been implicated in a major scandal.
This is big. This is going to
this
be
is big. This
very bad.
Yeah, this is on par, if not even bigger than the scandal that Miami was implicated in a few years ago, who are still waiting on the punishment, by the way.
Yeah. This is not something I don't think that you're going to see the talk of death penalty. I don't think. I mean, we don't know yet. But
we don't know, but I think the major difference between this one and what Miami dealt with is that Miami, it was basically one booster gone amok. This looks
like
that's
a lot of them.
It's not only the boosters, but coaching staff as well.
Yeah,
which is really scary.
You know, it's interesting about this, and basically this all started in 2001. And you look at Oklahoma State, they have been very, I'm not going to say they weren't competitive, but they didn't have a lot of winning tradition. And they wanted to get in on the game is what it sounds like. They had a coach previously who had basically kept boosters away and really tried to play it by the rules. And it just kind of changed around 2001. So it sounds bad. Les Miles was implicated in this. I mean, several players mentioned him. And not only him, but Joe DeForest was the assistant head coach there, and basically the players say that he was handing them envelopes full of money.
Yep.
And it's not like these guys. The thing that really, really irritates me is that all the people implicated currently are coaching. None of them are out of coaching. All of them are still in the business.
Yeah, and one thing to note, Andrew, this story was broken by Sports Illustrated, and the whole story is not out yet. They're releasing this story in five parts over the next few days, and the first part that was released today was the money, which talked about what you were saying, how basically players would come into the locker room after games and were handed envelopes with cash.
Right, it's almost like they had a bounty program, just like the Saints did.
Just like the Saints
because
did.
They were saying that if they got tackles, they would get $50. You know, they get $100 for an interception, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then the other sections, which will be revealed later, and we'll probably talk more at length when they're all revealed. One is academics, where basically players were
not going to class. You know,
they
did
not going to class, and there was all sorts of help that they were getting. The next one is the drugs, which sounds very scary. Apparently, marijuana was common before the games. The next one is the sex, talking about how to get recruits to come to Oklahoma State. Girls were sexually involved in getting recruits to come. And the last one is the fallout, which will be revealed next week. So
the interesting thing here is that the AD of Oklahoma State called the other ADs ahead of time and apologized, saying, you know, we know this is going to be really bad, and, you know, we're sorry for the disgrace that we're about to bring to the big 12.
Yeah, and you mentioned a lot of these coaches are still around. Who are these people, Andrew?
Right, so Joe DeForest was associate head coach. He's now at West Virginia, same position as associate head coach, and he released a statement saying that he's always done things with integrity and never done anything like this. And the head coach there is Dana Holgorsen, who used to be offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. So you can assume that if he was doing it at Oklahoma State and you actually can prove it, he's probably still doing it at West Virginia. The next one was Larry Porter, who was with LSU for several years. He went with Les Miles to LSU and was there till about 2009, where he became a head coach, and now he's back and he's running backs coach at Texas, so he's still in coaching. And of course, Les Miles, whose name was mentioned several times in this first part.
Yeah.
He's been coaching, he's won a national title at LSU. So, you know, he has released a statement saying he's always done everything with integrity and he's never been involved. And really another thing that was just very disturbing to me is that Les Miles, according to this article, I mean, he sent players to a guy named John Talley, who was the Fellowship of Christian Athletes area director. And he would send players to him, and this guy was paying players to basically quote-unquote work at his ranch when they weren't really working. He was paying them to have speaking engagements, which you can't do. You can't do that.
Not as an amateur
Not as an amateur athlete. So he was paying them to go on speaking engagements, and his quote was that, we cleared that with the university before we sent them on speaking engagements. The university knew that they were being paid. Well, then the university responded and said, no, we did not know that. So it's a mess. And for me to think that, you know, a guy who is a FCA director, his job is absolutely not to get athletes money. And, you know, that's a nonprofit organization, you know, that I've thought about giving money to the FCA chapter at Georgia Tech because I think it's a great organization. I really, really respect what they do. You know, I really, really like FCA. I think it does a lot of good. But when you have somebody like that doing what he was doing at Oklahoma State, that ruins the whole organization. You know, I mean, it really does.
It really
does. And that's just really, really upsetting to me.
Yeah, I agree. And, Andrew, this is something that really I don't want to, you know, dwell on this too much because there's still a lot more information that needs to be revealed over the next few days.
And that's really frightening to know that there's a lot more still to be
definitely. So we will keep tallies on this one, and we'll let you. We'll talk about it more Maybe not in the next podcast, because I don't think all the information will be out at that point, but possibly the one after that
right.
is when we'll have all the information. And so we'll fill you in. But we just we didn't want to leave it out of this week's podcast, because it is a huge story and something that is very, very shocking and surprising.
Right. I think we had an email.
The next thing.
Is that
the yeah, right? I wanted, before we get into the picks for this week, we got an email from one of our listeners, Charlie in Atlanta. And it's a great email, and I'm just going to read the whole thing.
Okay.
It's a little bit lengthy, but I feel like it's really good. So here we go. It says, "Hey, guys, I heard you guys talking about the law of averages, or a they're-due type of occurrence, in reference to GT beating Miami this year. I thought I might mention that in statistics, that idea is called the gambler's fallacy, and a lot of people really believe it. The gambler's fallacy is that people believe the outcome of future independent events is affected by previous independent events. For example, if you flip a coin 5 times and the first 4 tosses all land on heads, you might get the thought that the 5th toss is due to be tails, when actually the probability of it landing on tails on the 5th toss is still 50%, the same as it always was. However, this does not hold true for dependent events. If you were to draw a card from the top of a deck of playing cards, the probability of drawing a black card is 50%. But if you then draw a 2nd card, the probability has changed because one of the cards is already gone from the deck and the number of red and black cards remaining are no longer equal. Football games year after year are independent events. GT doesn't get to start with some extra points because Miami won last year. Why do you think so many people gravitate to the idea of law of averages? Or do you guys think that football games are actually dependent events, and that intangibles like a recent loss cause a team to play harder against an opponent, and that extra effort affects the outcome of the game? I personally think skill, strength, and scheme far outweigh intangibles in football." Thanks for the email, Charlie. This is a really interesting
Several
topic
good
because
points here. Really?
Because you're right, that law of average, that gambler's fallacy, is something that you hear all the
right.
time. I mean, you think about people who play the lottery, and you know someone's got to win, and if I keep playing, I'll have a better chance of winning. But what you don't understand is, you know, unless you're buying 1,000 tickets all at once,
right.
you know, if you're playing week to week the lottery, your odds are still 1 in 274 million or whatever they are. So the odds are still no better than the last time you played the lottery.
Right.
But in football, it's interesting because I feel like it is a good mix of independent and dependent. I don't think that you can discount a player's motivation to win or prepare to win. But you're exactly right. If one team is better than the other, then the odds are they're gonna win that game, no matter what the record was before.
Right, and my issue.
Agree?
Okay, here's my issue, is that so many times, and look at what the Four Letter Network is reporting right now. I mean, we're hearing about this is Alabama's time to get revenge on their loss to Texas A&M last year.
Yep. It's always the revenge.
It's the revenge game. Does that mean that last year Alabama went into that game, a home game, and said, you know what, we're just not going to play. You know, we're going to win this game. We're not motivated. And I don't think that's true. I think that you can look at the fact that last year, Alabama had come off a really, I guess you'd say, an exciting last-second elevating win. You know, it looks like, man, they really did it. Okay. So they had that huge boost, that mountaintop experience. And so the next week, if they cannot stay motivated, it is very easy to then kind of fall down and say, well, we won this game even though we committed a lot of mistakes last week. That's how much better we are than everybody else. So we're going to win the game. So, yes, that is true. But let's substitute here and say that they weren't going to be playing Texas A&M that week. And then instead they were going to play, Syracuse. Would Alabama have beaten Syracuse instead of Texas A&M on that same week last year? I would say the likelihood is a lot stronger because A&M was not a bad football team. You still have to be a good football team. So this idea, this revenge game, I think it, just like our email said, it's such a small, minute, you know, principle, part of the equation. Looking at, you know, for me, what I immediately thought of is Oklahoma, Baylor in, what was this, 2011, so 2 years ago. Baylor beats Oklahoma. RG3 has this amazing game. It's kind of, to me, the game that put him in a position where people said, this guy's the real deal. He should win the Heisman. It really catapulted him. Okay. Baylor had not beaten Oklahoma in a long time. The all-time series record is, I mean, Baylor might have won, you know, what, 8 or 9 times in the entire history of the series. All those other years, shouldn't it have been Baylor's revenge making them want to win that game more?
They're due.
Right, they're due. They have to win. Well, no, it didn't matter because Oklahoma just had better players. They were just better.
Yeah.
They're just a better team. So what was different about that year in 2011? Well, they had RG3. RG3 was a better player, and he was able to elevate the program and elevate the team. The coaching staff was a better coaching staff than they had had. They had a good plan in place, and that work was able to elevate them to beat Oklahoma. So I totally agree in the sense that most of the time, that quote-unquote revenge factor is such a small percentage. Because look at Georgia beating South Carolina. It was the revenge game. South Carolina had won 3 in a row. So you're telling me that last year when South Carolina had won 2 in a row, Georgia didn't want to win?
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't make any sense. It just because somebody wants to win more because they lost the year before doesn't mean they're going to win. It comes down to preparation. If you look at Alabama and Nick Saban, in the time that Nick Saban has been at LSU and Alabama, his record the year after a loss to a team is something, I don't know what I said to you, something like 13-2 or something. I can't remember exactly what I said. So it's very, very high. Nick Saban at Alabama does not really lose repeatedly to a team. Okay, why? It's not that he is angry that they lost the year before and so he feels like we need to play harder. He analyzes the game. What did this team do to us last year? How can we exploit the weaknesses? You know, it's a game plan. It has nothing to do with him being angry about it. It has everything to do with, okay, there were some problems last year. We have to exploit the weaknesses that they gave to us that we didn't see coming, and they were able to beat us. For that reason, I would say Alabama is going to be Texas A&M, not because Alabama is angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very good point.
Yeah. I think the way I think of it is it's not the coin toss, and it's not necessarily the cards off the deck. But if you were going to make an analogy, you could say – you could call it the deck of cards – but you're throwing in new cards afterwards, and you're shuffling the deck up, and then you're, you know, cutting the deck in half. I don't know what shuffling terms you can use. And then you're drawing again. Because every year it's going to change. You're going to have different players, different coaches, different scheme. You know, you may have learned something from watching tape the week before. You may have some players that are motivated, or their fake girlfriend just died, or I don't know, something to get them motivated to win that game. So, I mean, you could probably say intangibles are a part of it, but you're right. I think most players are always motivated to win the game.
Here's another example. Last week, USC lost to Washington State. On mm-hmm. Sunday, the players had a players-only meeting where they were going to talk about, you know, that they didn't have the effort, whatever. I don't know what they talked about. It's a players-only meeting. Because they had that players-only meeting, does that mean that this week they're going to go in and win the game because they've just refocused? I would say that definitely doesn't mean that. You've had a whole off-season where if you have not been focused and you have been poorly coached and you're ill-prepared, 1 week of being focused is not going to negate the months and months of preparation that you didn't do.
Yeah.
The ship
and
has
sailed.
And
the preparation that the other team has done.
Right. The other team isn't just going to lay down for you. So
yeah, it's like, oh, that team is motivated. I guess I'm not.
Right, right. Absolutely. Was South Carolina last week not, did they not want to win? No,
yeah.
They wanted to win the game. But you're on the road at a stadium where the crowd is going to be a factor. And the team,
the 12th man.
Right, and the team just might not be as good as they were last year. They lost a great player and their running back, Marcus Lattimore, so they might not be as good. So there's so many other things besides the, well, we needed to win it because we were just angry about it. It was, you know, it just was on our back, that monkey off our back. Sure, I mean, that motivational tactic works to an extent, but that's all it is. It's a motivational tactic. There's so much preparation that still has to go into it that, you know, so.
I agree. Well, thanks for the email, Charlie, and please send more emails. We love your emails. What's the email address, Andrew?
Oh, gosh. I feel like our listeners know it by this time, but...
I hope so.
But some of those people who've been duped into listening to us who now are just sitting at the edge of their seat, they are going to be wanting to send us an email, so they could send it to fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you. Perfect. Okay, one final section before we wrap it up today. Let's go through our picks for this week. Just a friendly reminder on how everybody's doing. Andrew is at 35-7, and I am at 37-5, so I have a slight edge going into this week. The first one on the list is Virginia Tech at East Carolina. Is there an upset alert here?
No, not at all. This is Virginia Tech, I think, big.
East Carolina beat them in 2007, I believe.
Yes,
but
that was, you know, nothing against East Carolina, and I do like their head coach, Ruffin McNeil, but I just think that there's no chance here.
No chance. Louisiana Monroe at Wake.
Here's the thing. Wake looked pretty bad last week.
Yeah, they did, but I still don't think that they're going to get knocked off by Louisiana Monroe.
I don't either. I think that they pretty much have to win this game.
Yeah.
And so I think that they still are probably better, and I think they're going to win.
Yes, I agree. New Mexico at Pitt.
Ah.
This one's tough.
Yeah. It is.
Now, New Mexico, they always have a pretty good running game, don't they?
And, you know, here's the thing about New Mexico is that they do run the ball well. And I think that this could be the fact that it's going to be at Pittsburgh. Kind of, if a home game for Pittsburgh means that's an advantage for sure. But
and they've had an extra week to prepare for this.
But here's the thing about New Mexico.
I don't know if New Mexico had a bye.
You know, Bob Davey, you know, the former ESPN analysis guy, the color commentator, I mean, he is the head coach at New Mexico, and he always loved to talk about Shan Gailey and the and the QB duck play that we would run. So that has nothing to do with this game at all, and I'm going to say that Pitt wins it.
Okay, I agree with you. I think Pitt wins at home. Okay, this is an interesting one. Boston College at Southern Cal.
I'm going to pick Boston.
Actually, I believe that's the other way around, though.
It
I
is.
Think
it's
actually,
at USC.
It's at Is it at USC?
I'm 95% sure
here.
It's at USC.
I'll double check as you're
I'll give my analysis. BC is going to win this game. I think this is...
Really?
Yes, BC is
okay,
going to win
this
game.
Okay, it is at Southern Cal. It is at Southern
this,
Cal.
So this is going to be one of those things... USC does not have a quarterback, okay? They do not have a quarterback. I don't care. They could have a players-only meeting every day this week. I think BC is going to come in there and knock them off.
I've really struggled with this one because I want to say Boston College so bad.
I think this is a signature win for Steve Adazio, and this is going to really elevate that BC program.
I'm going to go with Boston College too, just because I want my bold prediction to take place. I want Lane Kiffin to be fired like week 4 or 5 if possible. So I'm going to say Boston College.
What did
College
Lane Kiffin ever do to you? Okay.
He just rubs me the wrong. You know what he did? When we were in El Paso for the Sun Bowl, and we were supposed to have that, you know, the two teams were supposed to get together for the dinner. He really rubbed me the wrong way when his team didn't show up to that restaurant. And I have been to that restaurant, mind you, that they were supposed to do that dinner at. That restaurant is really cool, and I don't understand why he couldn't make the effort to be there. And that really rubbed me the wrong way. I thought it was just a jab at our program that they didn't even think that we were worthy to show up to get a meal with. So that's why I don't like Lane Kiffin.
You're just angry at him because of his smoking hot wife.
I don't look at that kind of stuff. What are you talking about?
Next game,
Georgia Tech and Duke.
I'm gonna say that Georgia Tech wins and covers the spread.
I think so too. I think we win big. Okay, Nevada, Florida State.
It's gonna be interesting. You know, I was talking with some people today about this. Nevada has got that. They invented the pistol offense. They run the pistol, and you know, they've had some good teams, but FSU home opener is gonna be big. Big win.
FSU is really good this year.
It won't be close.
Wagner, Syracuse.
Syracuse, man, they've had a rough couple weeks.
I think they're going to win this game. This is their cupcake.
They're going to win this game.
Okay, Maryland at UConn.
Now, you want to talk about revenge games.
Yeah, this is a little homecoming for one of the coaches.
I've been picking against Randy Edsall there. I think this is going to be my downfall. I'm going to pick Maryland. I think that they'll win this game.
I agree. So far we're all evened up here. We all have the same opinions. But it gets a little bit tougher when we get into the SEC.
No, it doesn't.
Louisville, Kentucky. Oh, this one. Okay, this one's not tough.
Louisville's going to win, and they're going to win big.
Yep, Louisville's really good, and they might have the worst strength of schedule ever because Cincinnati, oh, did you see that their quarterback get hurt? Oh, my gosh.
I didn't, but it doesn't sound like I want to now.
What's his name? He's really good. He's got a kind of a funny name, but he broke his leg last Saturday, and oh, my gosh, I couldn't unsee that video. That was awful, and he was a really good quarterback for Cincinnati. Cincinnati probably was Louisville's only real threat in their schedule, and now he's gone. So Louisville is probably going to go undefeated, but will have an absolutely horrible strength of schedule, which will probably keep them out of the national title game.
Well, now that you're back from watching that video that Will just described.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I apologize. Next game is Southern Miss at Arkansas.
You know, Arkansas didn't look great, but...
They didn't look good.
Southern Miss, I don't think, is that good either. So I'm going to say Arkansas.
Yeah, I agree. Tennessee, Oregon. I think this is a no-brainer.
I don't know, Will. I have to say, Butch Jones at Tennessee, and they're doing some good things over there. And I really like Tennessee a lot. And
I'm picking Oregon.
Well, I don't know. I like Tennessee, but I'm going to say I like them to lose, and I'm going to pick Oregon.
Okay, here's the big one, Alabama, Texas A&M. I'll tell you what I'm picking. I do not believe in the revenge game. I believe that Texas A&M is a better team this year than Alabama. I think that Alabama's line is going to get exploited during this game. I think Johnny Football is going to play a great game like he's done and the two games to start out the season. I think home field advantage is going to be huge for them. That's going to be a crazy crowd. This, you know, it's probably going to take a page out of the Georgia-Clemson game, and I think the home team wins this game. I think if Alabama was at home, they probably win, but I think Texas A&M wins it.
Wow. Home field advantage. You know, I hope you're right, Will. That's all I can say. I hope you're right, but Nick Saban, like I've quoted earlier, he doesn't lose two in a row to a team. He's one of the best preparation coaches. He's gonna.
So what you're saying is they're due.
I'm gonna say Roll Tide Roll, and I think that Alabama is gonna win. They're gonna squeak it out.
Alabama's due. So
I'm gonna say that Alabama has probably the best coach in college football. Nothing against Kevin Sumlin and what he's doing with the Aggies. I think that Nick Saban is going to – I think he's got a game plan.
Yeah. Okay, this next one's tough. Mississippi State at Auburn.
You know, honestly, neither one of those teams have impressed me.
No, not at all.
And, well, who's the home team here?
Auburn's the home
team. Then I'm going to say, you know, War Eagle. I think Auburn will win it just because they're the home team. Neither team has looked good at all.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Mississippi State just to be different. So
okay.
I don't know if that's a good pick or not, but I'm going to go with Mississippi State. Vandy at South Carolina.
Well, you know my old adage, I don't pick against the old ball
coach.
You
don't pick against the ball. We'll see how true that holds over the course of the season. Next game, Kent State at LSU.
Well, you know, Les Miles, he might have to call a press conference and, you know, talk about what a...
He's got some splaining
to
do.
Yeah, well, you know. But anyway, I'm going to say LSU is going to win that one, win it big.
Yep. Okay. This one's interesting. Ole Miss at Texas. Is Texas really, really bad? What's going to happen here? I think Ole Miss is ranked 25 for reference.
Texas is really, really bad. I'm going to say Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is going to put up some points.
I will have to agree with you. I'm going with Ole Miss as well.
Just like, you know, Colonel Akbar, the mascot for Ole Miss, once said,
it's a trap.
And Texas is going to feel like it's a trap when this game starts. Because it's. I think it could be. Look, if BYU could put 550 yards of offense, Ole Miss has got a good offensive line, and it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a big problem this week.
I agree. Okay, well, that's our picks for this week. If you think that we are wrong in any way, please email us at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com.
No more of those profanity-laced emails, okay?
We've gotten plenty of those. Please stop with those.
I mean, children read those.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
this is a family
show,
okay?
Children. It's a family show. So please email us, and thanks for listening.
And I'm Andrew Brown.
And I'm Will Patton. This is the Fourth and Short Podcast.